This is the Dairy Download, brought to you by Blimling & Associates and the International Dairy Foods Association, where we offer extra sharp market and policy insights on dairy. I'm your host, Bill Plourd.
And I'm your co-host, Kathleen Wolfley.
Today's episode is about shopping, as we welcome two guests who know a lot about current trends in the retail universe. Our first guest is a data guru known for his keen ability to forecast consumer behavior and trends. He offers some excellent insight on holiday shopping you won't want to miss. And then we turn to the independent grocery sector. How are the little guys faring during the pandemic? We'll get to that in just a couple of minutes.
Our sponsor for today's show is the good folks at Spartan Parts. From custom parts to upgrades and equipment audits, Spartan Parts does it best. Check out spartanparts.com/dairydownload to learn how you can overcome filling obstacles and help improve your filling speeds.
Thanks, Spartan Parts, and thanks, Kathleen, and also thanks to our listeners. If you like our show, be sure to tell a friend. We appreciate your support. Okay, Kathleen, where are we now?
Well, we've had a bit of an interesting week. Block cheddar landed here on Wednesday at $2.17, down 46 cents on the week. Barrel cheddar finished at $2.09, down 41 cents. Butter was unchanged at $1.44, and nonfat dry milk inched 3 cents higher to $1.10. Phil, I think that the most important thing right now is the Pfizer vaccine that was announced on Monday. The markets are pretty jazzed up on the outlook, but I think that there are still some hurdles in the market in terms of getting product out to consumers and overall just getting people vaccinated, not to mention reaching herd immunity to try to help bring the U.S. back to normal, or quote unquote normal.
Yeah, that's clearly exciting news and has a lot of promise, but it's down the road a little bit, which kind of brings me to my thoughts on what's most important right now. And I think that's going to be about restaurant demand over the next 4 to 6 weeks on into year end. We've seen COVID case counts back up. We're seeing some more restrictions. The colder weather is pushing people off the patio dining scene. And so I think the most important thing is how strong will restaurant sales be going into year end? And my hunch is they're going to be soft. And what will be the knock-on effects for dairy markets?
Phil, that kind of leads me into my stat of the week, which is really piggybacking on the idea that American consumers are lazy. So there was an NPD group study that showed that digital restaurant orders in the third quarter were up 138% year over year. So that's mobile apps, the internet, ordering via text message, which is the ultimate lazy move. But pretty impressive to see that people are taking up these opportunities to be exceedingly lazy.
That's certainly helping the food service industry stay keep its head above water. My stat of the week is 1.7 billion bushels of corn. Now, that sounds like a lot of corn, but that was the USDA's newest ending stocks estimate. And while 1.7 billion seems like a lot, it was actually quite a bit lower than the 2.1 billion expected from analysts and the 3.3 billion anticipated much earlier this year. So a lot less corn sitting around at year end, according to USDA. And that could have interesting implications on prices, which are higher. And from there on milk profitability on the farm. What's your fearless prediction this week, Kathleen?
My fearless prediction is that this time next week, block cheddar is still going to be above $2 a pound. How about you?
Well, I'm looking at the butter market, which is already kind of weak, but I think that between now and year end, we will see butter trade under 140 before we see it trade above 160.
All right, Phil, let's get to our first interview.
Well, friends, we are in for a treat today because we have Marshall Cohen on the line. Marshall is Chief Industry Advisor at the NPD Group, where he offers expertise on consumer behavior and the retail industry. He's been with NPD for more than 30 years. I know this much, our clients and acquaintances use the word legend when describing Marshall Cohen's work. Hi, Marshall. Welcome to the Dairy Download.
Well, thank you for having me, and thank you for that nice introduction.
We'll dive into food retail in just a moment, but first, let's cover just general trends in the U.S. during this pandemic. Do you have like three big takeaways from the retail sector as things have unfolded over the past 6 months?
The first biggest thing to really recognize is that the consumer has shown some pretty strong resilience. Once the stimulus money hit, retail has been on a road to recovery. Retail has been healthier. That's the first thing. The second thing has been it's really fallen into a lifestyle of different components. It's all about educating from home. It's all about working from home. And it's certainly all about entertaining and exercising at home. Those three sectors, besides eating at home, has really been the big drivers to where the retail has navigated its way to success.
The pandemic stockpiling has slowed. I think you've alluded to getting to sort of a more normal rhythm on some things. How is COVID impacting the way consumers shop for groceries and food?
Well, what we've learned is groceries, when we first saw COVID really hit the consumer's doorstep, we started buying for the week and in some cases even for just 2 or 3 days. So that has really stuck with the consumer. We really are seeing consumers not buying so far in advance of need. They're buying what we call now the here and now. And we've seen that in food, and we're certainly seeing that even play out across other industries. When we look at what's happened on the grocery side, it's really all about looking for new things. Consumers are really trying to figure out how to navigate, how to live in this changed lifestyle. The other is convenience and comfort foods are just playing such an important role. You know, we can't just keep eating the same thing every single day, but what consumers are looking for are the new products that are going to help them navigate their way through. We're not used to making breakfast every day, and we're not used to eating home as often as we have. So there's a lot of effort going out to try to figure out what are the right products to make those meals easier, more convenient. And we certainly know the digital side of the equation, with ordering online and picking up or doing the drive-through thing has just, really accelerated and gotten some of the restaurants to even think about drive-through only.
Do you think that we're going to stick with it? I personally wonder. How long would you guess before we revert back to some of our older habits? Or do you think that some of these trends will actually stick?
Some of the trends will stick. I call it social recession. Social recession is when, where we're living right now, we're just not able to socialize. We're not able to go out to restaurants at the same pace that we used to. And we don't have that desire at the moment. But when we ask consumers, what is the first thing you want to do? One of the top three answers is we want to go out to a restaurant with our friends. And that's second to, we want to go be with our family, visit and hug our kids and grandkids again. But so when you think about what's happening, this social recession, as it navigates its way back towards social progression, coming out of this social recession, we are going to see this pent up demand of wanting to go out. So I do think there's going to be a little bit of a surge in the going outside of the equation, but we are going to settle back in. People have learned they can spend a lot less money. Discretionary divergence. We're not eating out as much. We're not going to concerts. We're not going to movies. We're not going to the gym. We're doing so many things that's actually saving us money.
What shifts have you seen in the way people buy dairy products during the pandemic? How is the dairy industry benefiting from people staying home and cooking at home?
Our food team keeps looking at all of the different sales, and we still see ice cream on the top 4 of the best sellers. This comfort food, this ability to be able to tackle, fresh product. The consumer is really finding all kinds of things. So just think as something as simple as, breakfast cereal has become even more popular than ever. And we're seeing a lot of the parents revert back to their childhood days of eating some of those favorite cereals again. The other side of it is keep in mind also consumers are going to the grocery in some cases more frequently than before. And that makes, fresh dairy products something that's easier to get. They don't have to, feel like if they've only shopped once a week or once every 2 weeks, some of those dairy products that might have hit the sell-by date, now they're able to refresh it on a much more frequent basis. So think about going out for a cup of coffee versus making your own. So that's why the small appliance business has been the darling child of the COVID crisis. Small appliances have had weeks where they've been up 40% over last year numbers. And they are the absolute leading industry when it comes to growth for the discretionary categories.
I know that my Nespresso machine has gotten a much bigger workout than it had ever expected to get.
Think about how you're going to complement your espresso, and in many cases, hopefully, you're putting some dairy product in there.
When we zoom back a little bit from the consumer and the front line of retail, thinking about supply chains, we've read a lot of articles about out of stocks and how people might start stockpiling a little bit for the next wave or different behaviors. Are you seeing a lot of different supply chain behaviors that are interesting and surprising?
Some businesses were worried that as we enter into holiday, there would have been this pull forward effect, meaning we would have sold some of the product between March and now that we would have normally sold during the holiday months, and that there won't be the demand for the product. But so far, everywhere we've looked, there has not been enough penetration of product into every household in the U.S. to be worried about pull forward. I think as a consumer, one, if you find a product that you like, that you covet, I would suggest if it's one of those hot categories, grab it. It's not going to be there very long.
Thinking about the holiday season as the fourth quarter unfolds here, how muted do you think the holidays will be from a consumption perspective, either from a food perspective or from a stuff perspective? Are we going to be toning it down? Are we going to be sort of in the same mode we're in, which is sort of a heightened mode of something? Or where do you think we're going to be?
So let's talk food first, and let's look at the holiday meals and holiday gatherings. There are going to be people who are going to be serving meals in a very different way. Number one, we may not be certainly getting together in the large groups that we have. Grandma, who may have lived in Palm Springs, California, may not be traveling to, let's say, Westchester, New York to go visit the family. So she'll be Zooming in. And, you know, so the family meal has gotten different. The other side of that is we may not be serving family style the way we used to. We may be serving individual plates. We may be doing individual servings. We may be, you know, serving in a very different way. Some people are actually talking about having people bring their own meals with them to the family or to the holiday gathering. So think of it from a different perspective that way.
Do you think that more consumers will push toward local retail shops in comparison to your big box stores during the holidays?
There's, every year we see a big, strong push for, you know, shop small. And it does a little bit, but it never really quite generates the bump that the small businesses really want. This year, we clearly are seeing a very strong effort. Now, here's the difference. It isn't necessarily the support factor. It's the convenience factor. It's the local factor. It's the I don't want to go to a mall this year factor. So absolutely, yes, I do see small and local having a huge advantage. I also see small and local having a big advantage from just a consumption and a food consumption standpoint. People are wanting to go as close to home as they can. The average time people are spending in stores and or even groceries are less than what they normally do. In some cases, it's a third less. So if you would normally spend an hour, you're now spending 20 minutes. This is like, you know, hit and run, grab and go. That's really how people want to shop. And the local merchants have an absolute ability to be able to tap into the consumer's passion for that quicker and safer and friendlier environment.
So, Marshall, what's the most innovative service or product that you've seen crop up over the course of the pandemic?
I have to say the ability to be able to take retail and turn it into a digital opportunity. So curbside pickup. The buy online, pick up in store, the order online, pick up your food at a restaurant and or drive throughs. I mean, these things, you know, to me, one of the biggest innovations has been fast food that has literally said, we're not even going to open the inside of the storefront. We're just going to dedicate the whole business to drive through. To me, that's taking advantage of the opportunities that lie ahead and tapping into the consumer's needs and desires.
All right, Marshall. Well, thank you very much for joining us on the Dairy Download. Well,
thank you for having me. Good luck.
Now let's jump from the numbers to the grocery aisle.
It's exciting to have the opportunity to speak with Greg Ferreira, President and CEO of the National Grocers Association, a trade group that represents independent supermarket operators. He's been with the Grocers Association for just about 15 years now. Greg, welcome to the Dairy Download.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I'm excited to be here.
Okay, a very important question to start. Kathleen and myself and most of the people on our team are total grocery store geeks. We're always comparing notes and, well, we occasionally swap spy photos. So, Greg, we always wonder and worry, are you aware of any regulations against sneaking a photo or two while in the store?
Absolutely not. Taking a fun selfie in your favorite independent grocery store is absolutely welcome. Just make sure you do it with a mask on right now.
Okay. Well, you know, a masked picture in front of the butter aisle, that could be coming to a phone near you. Well, that's a great relief. Speaking of pictures, early in the pandemic, we saw lots of scenes of empty grocery store shelves across the country. How did independent grocery stores meet peak demand, and how are they keeping their shelves stocked now?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, we saw not just independent grocers, but the food industry, supermarket industry as a whole, we saw unprecedented demand for products. Of course, your industry experienced that as well on the, you know, the up-channel side. And that demand, while it has moderated certainly to a significant degree in most areas, most of our members on average are reporting sales that are still up, you know, for the first half of 2020, 13 to 14%. And so, you know, I told people early on, it was like experiencing Christmas and Thanksgiving week combined every single day. And it just never ended, like the Groundhog Day movie. So, you know, we've done well in terms of recovering from a lot of those supply challenges that we all experienced early on. There are still some categories that are absolutely still experiencing some supply challenges. And there are some categories we know are going to experience those challenges probably well into 2021.
How has the customer base at independent grocery stores changed during the pandemic? Has increased demand for food at home brought in new customers or consumers?
Absolutely. So I think we've seen a couple of things happen. We are seeing fewer customers in the store, but we are seeing larger basket size, right? So that tells us less frequent trips. If someone maybe had come to a grocery store two, even three times a week, they're now cutting that back to one trip, but they're doing a larger fill up, which is great. They're trying to, you know, not be in the store as often. We also have seen, most of our members are reporting, a lot of new customers into their stores. I think, you know, this pandemic did a lot of things. And one of those things that we've experienced is it really brought people into independent grocery stores that hadn't been there in a while. And also, you know, a lot of people made the decision and supposed to go into a really large big box store where you might have hundreds of people in it, going to a smaller independent supermarket they perceive to be safer.
While the local independent stores certainly have gained traction along those lines, I wonder about technology. I think that the big players, the Walmarts and the Krogers of the world, certainly have the scale and wherewithal to make investments in technology around things like click and collect and delivery. How have your members responded to some of those off-premises opportunities and challenges as the pandemic has unfolded?
This is an area that, you know, we've been talking to our members about for a long time. And if you're not in it today, you have to be in it. And if you're not thinking strategically, you know, to the future, you need to be doing that, or you're going to really be left behind. So we have independents that, you know, today are looking into partnerships around micro fulfillment centers. They're looking at how do we make strategic decisions around e-commerce? How do we establish better partnerships? You know, whether it's with technology companies, with wholesalers, even with other store groups.
So over the course of the pandemic, what would you say has been the number one request or conversation topic amongst your members back to your association? And how has that differed maybe from what the hot topics were pre-COVID?
So early on, it was all around supply. Supply and honestly, a lack of information, right? So we had things were changing very fast. And one of the things I'm very proud of is, you know, based here in the DC, you know, Food Association community really came together overnight. And we've already had great relationships, you know, between, for example, NGA and IDFA and others. And we were on the phone as a CEO team, I mean, every day, working through government challenges and supply industry challenges and pivoting to meet that. As the pandemic has continued to shift, you know, the conversations we're having with them are, okay, help me now understand how I can keep this new business that we've achieved, how I can continue to grow my business and be successful.
From a government perspective, how have government actions during COVID helped the independent grocery sector? And what do you hope to get in terms of government help or policy going forward?
Government can be a blessing, it can be a curse, right? We've had to navigate a lot of challenges. So early on, you know, we had an issue as a food industry, not just as grocers, but getting access to PPE, for example, mask. And so we were able to work as a food industry through USDA and FEMA to be able to ship cloth mask to any independent grocer, any supermarket and food industry company that needed them. And so being able to kind of be that conduit to bring information from the industry to government, which is what they, by the way, were also asking for, and then be able to take resources and push them down to the industry has been very, very important. We also need liability protections, common sense liability protections for those companies that are open and operating. We shouldn't have companies, particularly small businesses, be subjected to frivolous lawsuits because the government said, hey, I need you to be open. You're essential and you're serving your communities.
When all of this is over, what do you think will be some of the most important lessons learned for independent grocers that have weathered the storm?
So I think one of the biggest advantages the independent grocers have had was their ability to adapt and adapt quickly. Plexiglass is ubiquitous now across, you know, where they go to the doctor's office or the grocery store, convenience store. You know, that idea really started with some independent grocers who said, hey, how can we better protect our employees and our customers? And so they said, let's put plexiglass up at the checkout counters. I think back to the, you know, meat shortages that we had. You know, that's an example where, you know, many stores for a few weeks, it were just, the shelves were empty. Well, a lot of independent grocers, those shelves weren't necessarily empty because they were able to bring in local product that they had relationships with some of these producers or farmers and get product on the shelf. And I think that's a lesson learned. It's an area where, I mean, to be honest with you, I don't think, you know, the national chains are going to have that same capability and flexibility just because of their structure. And so, you know, as an independent grocer, what a great way to really you know, harness the power of that local, those relationships, and keep that going into the future.
Yeah. Do you think we'll see more of that, even after the pandemic ends, or do you see it receding, or you think that it's, you know, something that the independents are going to run with harder?
I think they're going to run with it. I think they're going to be, you know, running with it harder. We've seen research where, you know, consumers, will attribute local to being safer, just the way that they are thinking. And so it's kind of that mentality of, well, if this was produced or grown, you know, within 50 miles of where I am, maybe it's safer as opposed to if it, you know, got trucked halfway across the country.
We always talk about price matters and our economics work in business. And I'm guessing the perception is that that big box retailers have the ability to be much more dynamic and, frankly, cheaper when it comes to pricing. How do independents work those angles, and how do they fare in that whole area?
So, you know, it is interesting that there is a perception, I think, in a lot of areas that if I go to my big box store, I'm going to save on everything that I buy there. And it's not often the case. You know, independents are very competitive. They're able to do that because of, you know, the buying relationships they have primarily with their wholesalers. And so I think, you know, from an independent grocer's perspective, if you can be competitive on price, particularly on in key categories and key items, you can have a wonderful shopping experience. You can have great customer service, and you're convenient. Well, you have a great opportunity to win.
Well, Greg, I can tell you that from one grocery nerd to another, we really appreciate your time today.
Greg, thank you so much for being on the Dairy Download.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. It was great to be with you and speak to your listeners, and look forward to coming back on in the near future.
That's a wrap for today's show. As always, we want to thank our production team, Matt Herrick, Michael Gooden, and Andrew Jerome at IDFA, and Corey Romero over here at Blumingen Associates. If you are interested in what Kathleen and I do for our day jobs, check us out at www.dairy.com.
Again, a huge thanks to our sponsor, Spartan Parts. Spartan Parts also offers a small filler, low to medium speeds requirements. Learn more about the 6-valve, 3-head capered gravity filling at spartanparts.com/dairy download. Thanks for listening to the Dairy Download. Until next time, stay sharp.